Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. I'm the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, I'm joined by Charles Reed, CEO of Get Payroll, a Marine veteran, CPA, U.S. Tax Court practitioner, and author of the book, The Payroll Book. Over more than 30 years, Charles has built Get Payroll into a trusted resource for small businesses across the country, especially family-owned and closely held companies. He's been featured on Fox News, Forbes, and The Huffington Post, and brings an extraordinary mix of experience from Marine combat infantry to IBM systems engineer to business founder. His journey is one of discipline, resilience, and leadership forged both in the field and in the boardroom. Charles, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Ed, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Great to have you. So, Charles, if you would, take us back to your early days. What do you remember most about growing up around your father's business, and talk about that and maybe how that shaped your understanding of work and responsibility?
Dad had his business. He was an insurance consultant. And he had it when my first memories, he already had the business. He had it at the house. He worked out of the house. We had secretaries, as well as my mother worked in the business. I started working for him when I was 6 years old, making wet Verifax copies at a penny a piece. And in the afternoons, the kids would do all the licking all the stamps and putting the envelopes together and everything else, starting at 6 years old. I never worked in the business itself. He was an insurance consultant. It required a certain amount of knowledge, but we did filing and we moved boxes and we reorganized the office and moved equipment and all the things that untrained people can do in a business. And that was just part of growing up. And of course, they worked together. And so during the day, it was business. It wasn't family. It was business. And we were required to do other things. Good. So I grew up around it. To me, a family business was just a normal thing. It's just, when you grow up around it, it's not abnormal. Other kids' parents didn't do that for the most part, but it just was a normal thing to me.
And back then, I guess a little bit novel, home office, maybe comparative to today's standards where that's far more common.
Very much. We had business telephones in there. Dad was a Rotarian, so he knew all the movers and shakers. So if he needed business lines at the house, it got done. In high school, I had done up a paper for one of the English teachers. And in it, over the course of the week doing it, I'd used several different typewriters in the office. And they had different typefaces.
Really?
Yeah. There was a Royal, there was an Olympic. These were manual typewriters. These weren't electric.
No, I get it. I get it. I remember them.
I do too, very well.
I learned on
Royal Standard for a number of years. And so when I put that together, the teacher took umbrage that I had done it because of all these different typefaces. So my father did up a letter to the principal using the different typewriters.
Very clever.
And explaining which one was which and when they'd gotten in the office and what it was used for. And that shut the teacher up. So there were lots of things like that.
Yeah.
Because that was the interface of the house, was the business.
Yeah. You're bringing back a lot of my own memories of, I think I was maybe 7 years old when I was collating press kits back in the day. But one thing that I can honestly say I fondly remember is that I was never short of school supplies. Because if ever I was running out of pens or pencils or paper, I just say, "Dad, I need to make a trip to the office," and I could grab two of this and three of that, and it was around.
And for me, it was even simpler because the office was on the second floor, and so was my
Yeah,
bedroom. So it was
yeah.
just down the
Down
hall.
the hall. That's great. When we were talking prior to this episode, you said your father could be somewhat controlling and a bit unwilling to delegate. So, if you could reflect on that for a moment, and how did that influence ultimately shape the leader that you eventually became?
Dad was a naval officer during World War II. He was a Depression. No, he grew up during the Depression. He was born in 14. So he and mother both graduated from UCLA in 36. The Navy was obviously, and the war was a big influence on him, but he was very much of a controlling individual. He liked things his way. And though he and mother got along, obviously they were married for well over 50 years before he passed. And as far as a child, I think the marriage was good. But he never took on a partner as the business grew because he couldn't work with people effectively. It's one of the reasons he was in business for himself. He was very good at what he did, very knowledgeable, very much able to charm people. But it was his way. And we learned that as children, and we adapted to it as every child does to their parents. But it was not the happiest childhood. My father was consumed by his business and a workaholic. I was in swimming, in drama, in judo, in other things as children do as I grew up. Boy Scouts. My father never attended an event. Not one. Not a single one. I resented that for many years. Though I finally found acceptance of it because it was just him. It wasn't that he didn't love me, it's just that his love was not what I expected. The outcome of that, of course, is I went to all my kids' events. I was a chaperone. I went to campouts. I did all the things because I resented him not doing anything. And that's why I would never go to in business with him, because I could never have worked for him. It was a suggestion at one point in time, but by the time he accepted that he was mortal and would need to do something, I was already a CPA and in the corporate world and was not interested.
Understood. And I'm almost inclined to ask, what is it about those naval officers? Because my dad was Navy too, active during Korea. And I had another guest on whose father was Navy, and it seems that maybe they teach it that way. You top-down leadership. Whenever we,
And that's really, it's very hierarchical. And I learned that in the Marine Corps, and I had to unlearn that in business. But think I was more aware of it because I'd been exposed to it rather than somebody who hadn't been exposed to it and then has developed those military habits.
As a former military, as a your dad a veteran, what do you think about you going into military yourself?
Well, three of the four kids went into the military. Two of my sisters served. And I served. My third sister used to fly military airlift command flights for Pan American in and out of Vietnam. So we all served in our way. It was a point of pride with him. We have been citizen soldiers in our family going back to the Revolutionary War.
I get
One of
it.
my great 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 grandfathers signed the Declaration of Independence. So it's just family tradition.
I get it.
All three of my sons served.
Wow, that's amazing. That's really amazing. So going back to you had that kind of consideration about do I come in with dad, but you were off, as a CPA at that point. When did you start to realize that you wanted to build something for yourself, Charles, versus working for someone else?
It was in my late 30s, early 40s. I had come to the realization that I was not going to rise to the top in the corporate world. I didn't have the political skills and did not want to requ in did not want to get them. I didn't want to acquire the skills necessary to succeed in the corporate world as I saw it. I've been a critic of corporate management for many years. I believe that most of American business is run very poorly. And I didn't want to be part of that. And I didn't want to acquire those skills. So I said, if I want to run a business, and having grown up in one, I liked the concept, I was going to have to start my own. So at 43, I did.
And to the extent experiences, past experiences, sometimes they shape us for good and for bad and a bit of both. So how would you say the experience of serving with the Marines, of working in some larger corporations, to what extent did they prepare or shape you once you endeavored into entrepreneurship?
One of the things you learn in the Marine Corps, particularly as an NCO, one of the fallback things the Marine Corps uses is mission men self. As a Marine, your job is to complete the mission, period, regardless of the cost. That's your first and primary thing, is to complete the mission. Then you take care of your men. Then you take care of yourself. That's taught in leadership as an NCO. That's influenced me immensely. And that basically ties into Dad's idea of the customer's always right. You have to take care of the client. You have to take care of the customer if you don't have any business. So the complete the mission and take care of the client work hand in hand. And as a business person, as a business owner, your greatest asset is your staff, your employees, your men. You've got to take care of them. If someone is not going to get a paycheck, it's you, not them. All those things, if you take care of your people, they will take care of you. And that's the concept. If you take care of your people, the mission will get accomplished. If you don't take care of your people, if you don't take care of your men, if you don't take care of your employees, your staff, things won't happen. They won't achieve the level that they could if you took care of them, if they were loyal to you. And then loyalty runs two ways. You have to be loyal to them so they can be loyal to you. So it all works together. Now, there are some things in the military that don't work well in business. The hierarchical aspects don't translate well to business. In the Marine Corps, everybody and the Navy and all military services, you are subordinate or superior to everyone else. It can come down to your placement on the list for rank change on that day. And if the guy is ahead of you, he's superior to you. It's very precise. There's no doubt that everybody is either subordinate or superior to you. That doesn't translate well into business. That was something my wife had to break me of. And she did. She was very much of a people person. And she broke me of those habits, thankfully, which allowed me to succeed in business, frankly. Otherwise, I'd have been my father, and it would have just been me.
Good for her. And it would seem that when sometimes we kid, because I'm a second gen, kid with other second gens, if they say something that sounds very team collaborative, I'll say, spoken like a true second gen leader. Because usually the first gen tends to be a little bit more authoritarian about how they govern when there's a population, whereas second gens, we tend to want to get feedback, input, collaborate, hear other views.
I think because we were subject to that authoritarianism, we
Could very well
resented
be.
it.
It could very well be. Let's talk about something you brought up for a moment, Charles, about you referenced lacking the political skills to rise in big companies because even a family governed and some family governed businesses, they scale 200, 500, thousands of people. And by and large, politics are going to show up. They do, even on a small team. So, what are some things that you took away from that acknowledgement? Hey, I don't really have the political skills. What did that show up as? And to what extent might you impart some wisdom to the family business leader who is, whether it's running a team of 10 or 20 or maybe several hundred or thousands?
Making a staff work, it's chemistry. You need to be very careful about your selection of people. They need to mesh. If they don't, then you need to fix the situation. And if that means letting people go, so be it. So there's a certain level of native intelligence you may need in a position. and you have to screen for that. But technical skills, for the most part, can be taught. Social skills are a great deal more difficult to teach, and you will probably be unsuccessful. So you've got to have good people. Don't hire jerks. Don't hire somebody just because they're a recognized expert at something. If they don't mesh with your team, they're just going to create discord. That's the first biggest thing. The second thing is to build loyalty. And the best way to do that is be loyal to your employees. Take care of them, understand them, talk to them, listen to them. I tend to get focused. It's just me. So I tell every employee that if I'm not listening to them, they are to literally wave a hand in front of my face because I have blinders on and I'm not seeing them and I'm not hearing them. Literally, take your hand and wave it in front of my face and I will stop and I will listen. So if you think I'm not, do something. I tell every new employee that in the hiring process because I know that's me, and that's I get focused, which is good, but it causes problems. And so you have to develop loyalty. Our bereavement policy, and it wasn't this in the beginning, but it became it, is whatever you need. One of the ladies that works for me, she's worked for me for a number of years. She's a daughter of another employee. Her father died, and she has a large family, and it all fell to her. And it took her 3 weeks. The cost of paying her for 3 weeks was a fraction of the cost of replacing her. And the loss of institutional knowledge. Why would I give up her skills and her loyalty and her intellectual no in her knowledge and everything else because she had a personal problem that took 3 weeks to solve? Now, if all you need is 3 days, that's fine too. And does that create some inequities? Of course it does. And you have to deal with those. But every person is unique. You can't treat them all the same. Yeah, the whole thing, rules are rules, and everybody gets treated the same, and so on. I suppose if you're JCPenney, you've got to do it. If you're 10,000 people. But if you're a dozen people, everybody understands. And they may resent it a little bit, but they understand. And so you talk to them, you listen to them, and if they resent it a little bit, you make it up to them some other way.
I tend to look at it as a pendulum. Sometimes the pendulum's going to swing out to one side, and you're going to have to maybe put in some more time on behalf of the company. Sometimes it'll swing the other way, and you got to put in some more time on behalf of the family. And as long as there's communication and understanding, the pendulum will find its way back to a neutral ground soon enough. And so my people understand that, and they understand that's how I operate. It's like, it's going to be a no problem. You got to take care of something for me, no problem. But when I need you to take care of something, I also need it to be no problem.
And they will if you let the pendulum swing the other way.
Absolutely.
One of the phrases I use is family first. My family is more important than my business. Okay? I expect that for everyone who works for me, their family is more important than the business. And you have to treat it that way. If they have a family problem, that has to be addressed first. If they get a call, sick child, wife's had an accident, whatever, I tell them go. Don't finish this. Don't worry about this. Go. Go take care of your family. I'm not in a life or death business. So if somebody leaves in the middle of something, it may cause some problems. It's not going to kill anybody. It's not life and death. Your family's more important. If a client gets pissed over it, We'll work with them. And if they don't understand that family's first, I may not want them as a client.
Good point.
My eldest daughter died of cancer.
Sorry.
That was very devastating to me. And I was doing a lot of personal work for my clients at that time. And it took me several months to get my head back on straight. And in looking at the work I was doing for my clients during that period of time, it was terrible because I couldn't focus. And so I apologized to my clients, all of them, that the work had been so bad. And everybody was aware of it, and everybody understood. I didn't lose a client. They just understood what was going on and put up with it. And that's a really wonderful thing, is loyal clients. Loyal employees are great, and so are loyal clients. And it goes both ways. If you're loyal to them and take care of them, they will return that loyalty. Loyal clients are much more important than happy clients.
Yeah.
Because happy clients can become unhappy.
Yes, they can.
And leave. A loyal client is not going to leave. I think that Carol Azad brought that home to me, what a loyal client is. We were talking one day and it came up and she said, oh, I have people call me every week wanting to do my payroll. And I tell them no, that I'm happy with Charles. And they say, we can do it cheaper. And she said, you know what I tell them? I say, I don't care if you'll do it for free. I'm not leaving Charles. Because I've taken care of her and other problems and associated things and worked with her for many years. And she wasn't going to go anywhere under any circumstances. It didn't matter. Cost was no longer the issue. So that's a loyal client. And if you can develop that, it's wonderful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you brought up another great point, which is family-centric is a value in your organization. It sounds like similarly, the types of clients you attract believe the same because they get it. And I started to see that when my dad passed, in the compassion and understanding amongst the client ranks as I was going through his loss. And they all got it. And some of them that lost parents would actually call me up and would talk about it. And it was really, it meant a lot to me. Because at that time, when you lose someone, you need people around, you know?
Yes.
You need some compassion in your life. And when you circle yourself with the right people, the right talent, the right culture, and the right clients, what's there when you need it most? And that's really
absolutely
important. So your late wife, Ruth, did you start get payroll with Ruth, or did you start it and became a co-pilot de facto? Did the two of you literally start it together, or did you start it and then she joined it?
We started it together.
You started it together. Okay.
She wasn't working at the time, if I remember right. And so we talked about it and the opportunity came up, and we'd been married at that point in time more than 20 years. We started it together. She worked in the office. She took care of the clerical work and answered the phone and talked to clients, which was great because she's very much more of a people person than I was. And it worked very well in that aspect. There were bumps. I tell people, in my opinion, working with your spouse is not a natural thing. Yeah. We had to split the relationship. At work, I'm the professional. I'm the CPA. There's things I say, and it has to be a certain way, whether she liked it or not. And of course, I'm a great believer in happy wife, happy life. So in our personal life, it was her way. And she was used to that. So when it got to the office, and I said, no, it needs to be this way. And she says, no. And we had to split that relationship between business and home. That, and in the business, I'm the boss. And at home, she's the boss. One of the bad habits that I had to break her of was she would, at night, we'd get into bed and she'd have one last problem from work. She wanted to get off her chest
Oh
and
yeah.
she'd tell me about it.
Yeah.
Then she'd roll over and go to sleep.
Yeah.
And I would toss this thing over and over in my mind until 2 or 3 in the morning sometimes.
Yeah.
She's over there snoring next to me. So we had to come to an accommodation. After dinner, no more business.
Yeah.
And in a small business, if you're working with your wife, you live the business. It's 24 hours a
Oh,
day.
yeah.
But we came to an agreement that we would not talk about business after dinner. That meant for some very late dinners sometimes, but no more of this. The last thing at night is to throw a problem on Charles.
That's a
So.
great guardrail to put up. I think many guests on the show, we've talked about that, is when is it okay, not okay to talk business versus family, vice versa. And I know that when my dad and I overlapped for those years, I put up the guardrails. I said, we're at a family gathering, Dad. Let's, if this isn't a 9/11 emergency, and it probably isn't, this can be addressed on Monday or outside of this gathering, just because it could monopolize the entire conversation. And not everybody in the family wants to hear about the latest and greatest dynamic at D'Elia Associates.
Some unhappy customer is not proper discussion for the grandkid's birthday party.
There you go. There you go. So, moving on to, there was a period of time where you are a U.S. tax court practitioner, and I've even been labeled as an IRS insider. So I'm sure we could probably talk about that for hours, if not days. But if you could offer up one insider truth about dealing with the IRS that most small family business owners don't quite understand, what would be an insight that you could impart?
Appeal, appeal, appeal. Don't ever give up. The IRS makes millions of mistakes every year. It's 100,000 civil servants using technology, some of which goes back to the 1960s.
That's not very reassuring, Charles.
I didn't intend for it to be. So they make mistakes constantly. And so there's a whole series of administrative appeals. And at the end of that, you can go to tax court. We have one just recently that goes back to 2017, 2016, 2017 filing. And we'd appealed it and appealed it and appealed it and appealed it. We were right. And we had the paperwork to prove we were right. But we couldn't get anybody to look at it and listen to us. And there were technical snafus with the administrative aspects of the IRS. And the reason I became a U.S. tax court practitioner was I filed a petition with tax court, got it, and on the second hearing with the judge on the phone, the district counsel for the IRS admitted they did not have a copy of the penalty notice that I was reading from to the judge. Which said, if I did this, there was no penalty. And I had done that. So I actually sent the IRS a copy of their own penalty notice. And we got a whole new administrative hearing. And the guy that looked at it said, I don't know what the problem is. You don't owe any money. This took 8 years to solve and reams of paper, but it was several thousand dollars. And so we pursued it for our client and we won. And we do that on a regular basis because it's an administrative nightmare. And if you don't know your way around it, you're lost. So if you don't understand the administrative appeals aspects and the tax court aspects, get somebody that does. Now, I'll be honest, on more than one occasion, there's been a penalty for $10. We've just paid it for the client. It wasn't worth writing the letter. The client is all upset about it. He doesn't want to pay it. We've just paid it. And sometimes they get reversed years later, and the client gets the money back, and we just let them have it. It's not worth arguing about for $10. But there's a point that it becomes worth arguing about and worth fighting for. And that's what we do for our clients.
I have a
So,
colleague that's, without naming names, I have a colleague that's dealing with a situation, and it's staggering that they don't really operate on the same time schedules that business leaders do. They have a
no.
much different time horizon on getting things resolved that, often can be measured in years, not months.
Yeah, patience is a wonderful thing dealing with the Internal Revenue Service. The longer it goes, the better it is for you.
Yeah, that's a
Okay,
great point.
so don't get upset if things don't happen the way you expect in a business. You expect things to get done and get done now. That's not the way the government operates, and it gets very frustrating if you don't adjust your time attitude to dealing with the Internal Revenue Service.
Said, and that's a great piece of advice. So thank you for that. Now, I believe I was reading in your background that, and forgive me if I got this wrong, but that your intent is to, when you're done with GetPayroll, to leave the company to, not to family, but to employees. Did I get that right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. My children are grown and off doing their own thing. They're not interested in the business. The one that was my eldest daughter, and she passed. So there's nobody that wants to work in the business. And if they did, I would be, it would be a different thing. But my employees helped me build this business. Without them, I couldn't have done it. It gave me a very nice life. It's given me a good retirement. I think they should have the same chance. The business is going to them. I could have done it on a leveraged buyout, and it wouldn't make much difference to me personally. And I know they would resent writing that check every month. Why? I can't take it with me. If I was destitute, it would be something different because it's a wonderful asset. But I think it's a way of giving back. They helped me build it. It allowed me to build the big house and live nice and do things and set up a good retirement. Guys, here's your chance. Do the same thing.
That's awesome. So along the journey, and I just wanted to touch on this. You put some things to paper. You wrote the payroll book to help business owners avoid IRS penalties and other costly mistakes. Talk about that for a moment, if you would, Charles. What was your motivation for putting it all into writing?
I get questions all the time, obviously. And sometimes it would be nice to say, here, read this. And I collect articles and we'll send them to clients and other things. I buy a book on how to run a family business and send it to clients. There was nothing out there. The only thing out there that I could find was the payroll source, which is put out by the American Payroll Association, basically to train payroll processors to become certified. So I said, why don't I write something? 2 years later, and with the help of Wiley and Sons, a publishing house, the payroll book came into existence. I refer to it as 30 years of wisdom distilled down to 95,000 words. And it is the subtitle is A Guide for Small Businesses and Startups. And that's what it is. It explains payroll and payroll-related matters. There's a lot of fun things and stories and tripwires and problems that are in there as well, and explain them and things to do and things not to do. And so it became my business card. And it's sold. I didn't get rich off of it by any stretch. You don't get rich off of one business book. But it's fun to have. It wasn't fun to write, but it's fun to have.
For sure.
And it just was again, a way to codify my expertise and make it available to the public. It also has my phone number in the book. So if you don't get the answers you want, here's who you call.
But that's so refreshing, and clearly it comes from a place of experience and expertise, whereas so many of the books that I'll come across today, it's clear that it's just somebody trying to write a book, whereas a lot of the advice is either, I'd say, very thin, or it was clear that it was leveraged from other thought leaders from a previous generation, whereas yours is very much grounded in the here and now and the front lines of doing this. And doing it successfully for a 30 plus year span. A compliments to you. And yes, it's a big endeavor because I know, because I've tried a few times and I just couldn't get there.
It took a lot more work than I expected, I
I
promise
bet,
you.
I'll bet. So we talked a little bit about your succession, your plan to leave your business to your team. And this question really came up around something that my dad was on record saying to actually my uncle. When my uncle posed the question, my dad's name was Mike. Mike, what do you want? What do you want the Lee Associates to be? What do you want from that effort? And his answer was, I'd like to build something that lives beyond me. And that was his de facto vision, if you will. And here he passed in 2012, and here we are in 2025. I certainly can do a nod up to the sky and say, Dad, mission accomplished, because here we are 61 years. When you think about those clients that you've worked with, business owners and family businesses, thinking about succession, what would be a piece of advice you might offer up for building a company that lasts beyond the founder to that next generation? What would you say to that business owner? Something to think about.
If you plan on succession, as I don't, for the family business, then you need to make sure that the family really knows what business is. I have seen too many family businesses over the years fail in the second and third generation, because they're not raised and experienced and have become business people. I work for a firm here in Dallas years ago before I started my own. It was a family business. And the boss inherited from his father, and he had no business running a business. He was raised as a rich kid. And that's how he was raising his kids. And they had no idea what it was to worry about where the next meal was coming from, how to put food on the table for your family, worried about the next paycheck. He had no concept of that. And therefore, he did not connect with his employees. And he ended up destroying the business shortly after I left, because he didn't understand who his employees were and where their mind was. So, one of Michener's books, Hawaii, I think, the scion of the shipping industry, his father told him to go to work for the competition. And he did. And he moved up in the ranks of the competition and learned how to run it long before he took over the family business. So my recommendation is to throw your kids out there and let them work and live and struggle somewhere else other than under daddy's watchful eyes, so they get experience and knowledge and understand what it is like to be on the other side. Because if they don't understand that, then they won't relate to their employees.
That's great advice. That's really tremendous. And I can honestly say that when my dad, so my dad and I, we butted heads a good deal because we're crazy passionate Italians and that's what we do. But we loved each other. We just butt heads. However, once upon his official retirement, for the next dozen years that he was with us, he was an invaluable resource, advisor, mentor. And it was interesting that most of the questions I'd come to him with had nothing to do with the technology of our industry or the advancements in our industry. They were all people issues. And he was very good at navigating people issues. But I think that once he passed and realizing that there's so many times since where I just wish I could pick up the phone again and ask one more question. And by virtue of going out where you don't have that lifeline of a family member, And working in a business where you are purely an employee, I think can be an invaluable experience and an invaluable bring back to when that person does. Now, sometimes they go off and they stay with that other company, but when they do come back, they come back with a wealth of knowledge, a wealth of insight, and a greater appreciation for not only what it takes to lead, but what it takes to serve. Very good
If you're
insight.
in the family business, you're always the boss's kid.
Yep.
If you're in Joe Blow's business, you may be Mike's kid, but that don't mean shit here. It's a whole different world.
Yeah,
And
for
it's
sure.
one that your employees live in, and you need to understand it.
For sure. Great piece of advice. Last question, Charles. For any of our listeners that want to learn more about you or about Get Payroll or the payroll book, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
We're on the web at getpayroll.com, all over the place. My personal email is cjr at getpayroll. I'll respond. If it's a quick question that you just need an answer to, 972 353 0000. That's our
Awesome.
phone number. It's the only good
Thanks.
thing GTE ever did for me. And then for the book, we were amazed when we were doing this that the payroll book was a title that we could get, and we got it. And so we got the website, thepayrollbook.com. And if your listeners would like a copy of the book, if they will go to thepayrollbook.com and enter the discount code podcast, we will ship them free of charge a copy of the book as long as supplies last.
Awesome. Wow, that's very gracious of you. Thank you, Charles. And thank you also for sharing your story, from the lessons learned from your father to the discipline of the Marines to success of Get Payroll and the book. Your journey is a masterclass in resilience and responsibility. Again, we've been speaking with Charles Reed, CEO of Get Payroll, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for listening in with us, and we'll see you next time. Charles, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.deleonet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeLeaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.